Welcome to another instalment of Credit to the Girls. As always, I'm Lucy Watkin, and I'm here with Sarah Black. Hello, Sarah.
Hello, Lucy. How are you going?
Yes, very good. But haven't been as social this week as you have, heading down to the W Awards on Tuesday night, going to the Bulldogs Best and Fairest this evening. You're just a woman about town.
Yeah, it's a bit of fun. I'm exhausted. To be perfectly fair,
it's so tough. Being AFLW's premier journo who just gets invited everywhere.
Oh, I'm not sure about that. I am enjoying like the free food though. That's a definite perk that I can get used to.
That is true. Just getting fed well for a week.
But one thing about the W Awards is that like I did this last year as well. You sort of. Because when you get to know a few of the players, you're like, oh, yeah, they're just normal people, la, 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 la. And then when you see them all dressed up, you're like, oh, these girls are elite athletes. And it's like, I haven't done a push-up in a very long time. it's a little bit, yeah. And then they're all like, yeah, like 5'10" or something. And it's like little me. And I'm like, oh, I'm a little bit out of my depth here.
You just have to tell them that you play footy too, and they'll respect that.
Yeah.
They'll be into it.
Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, if you tell them you play football, then they have to sort of... For like, you know...
Solidarity.
Exactly, yeah. Solidarity. You're not just another journo. You're also a journo who plays footy just like them.
Yeah.
You know?
And so what if I only touch the ball 2 times a game?
Exactly.
I'm a pressure player.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You and Ebony Marinoff, exactly the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. I feel it. But
yeah. I am Ebony Marinoff, oh, definitely. Yeah.
You won that Rising Star Award last year. I would love to win the Rising Star. I'd love to have a 20K injection into my bank account. That'd be nice.
Yeah, well, Chloe Malloy's the one with that in her bank account now.
She is.
But very well deserved.
Very well deserved, and we'll chat about that later. But I think we just have to start... Well, I think this episode's going to comprise of two things, pretty much, or three things, I should say. The grand final, big grand final chat, huge, huge day. The W Awards, and we also have a very special guest, Scott Gowans, on the show today to chat to us sort of about what's happening down at North Melbourne as they look to enter the competition next year. So exciting times down there.
Definitely. And, yeah, Scott Gowans is a great coach. He's come from Diamond Creek. He's also coached Vic Country, youth girls, very experienced. North is in very good hands there.
They are in very good hands, and I can personally vouch for him considering that he is also my coach. And
yeah, we probably have to put a little disclaimer on there. Yeah,
disclaimer that Scott is my coach, so not. I don't think there was any bias in there whatsoever. But
you ask the tough questions?
I did ask the tough questions. You know, asked him how he thought about this season, where it's going, how he positions North in the mix, and all that kind of stuff.
Whether he's going to play you come VFL season.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, I'm interviewing him just so I can get chummy enough to get drafted.
Exactly.
You know, just all of the really important things. I'm kidding, Scott. If you listen to this, it was a great chance to talk to you about all of that. And but now I think we should touch on the biggest event of probably the AFLW season, which is that grand final. And it was a bit disappointing in the end, not the game itself, but just the weather. It was such a downer.
It was so Melbourne. It literally, if you're listening to this outside of Victoria, it has not rained in Melbourne. It hasn't rained in the state much. Literally hasn't rained in Melbourne for 7 weeks.
Yeah.
Like there's been a few odd spots here and there. But, oh boy, it was making up for lost time on Saturday. The rain started about, maybe 3 hours, 4 hours before the match was due to begin. And did not stop. It was horrific.
Did not stop until the game was over, and then it was almost blue skies.
Yes.
So thanks, Melbourne. Thanks a bunch.
Yeah. It did lessen off in the second half, and
that
I think we saw that with the Bulldogs really gaining ascendancy.
Mm.
The Lions are used to wet weather footy. They play up north in summer.
They played 3 of their 7 games in wet weather, I think, as well.
Something there was a Collingwood game, the Fremantle game. I'm not sure if I can't remember off the top of my head if there's another one.
But they definitely played more than any other team.
Yeah.
That's probably the point that I'm making.
Yes.
Yeah. So that I thought, they would, on one hand, be used to these conditions, but it never gets easier, like playing in wet weather, like. I feel like just sometimes it would just feel harder than others. And that was like that wasn't sort of rain where it's like it wasn't bucketing down, but it was that rain that soaks everything.
Yes.
Which is so, that is hard
it's
to play
uncomfortable.
In. It's uncomfortable. It's hard to play in because it's not necessarily making things muddy or things like that. It just soaks you to the bone.
And the ground did hold up really well. Mm. It's recently relayed turf at Princess Park. So that was a positive, that it wasn't, that they weren't playing in a mud pit. They weren't playing in Cairns, just to go a little bit off topic.
Oh, wow. I did see the conditions there, and that was, that's like brings a whole new meaning to wet weather football, those conditions.
Yeah.
That was like they always called off the game.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Thankfully that did not happen at the grand final.
I did hear an anecdote of someone saying that a junior match they played in, 20 odd years ago, the umpire called off the game because he was worried someone was going to get knocked out and land headfirst in a puddle and drown. Like, that was almost where we were at up in Cairns. So, it's out there.
That is out there, but as you said, that can happen. Like, yep. People fall asleep in the bath and it happens, so, like, I get it. There was also, won't go too far, but I was like, there was another thing that happened in the English Premier League, but I'm like, we don't need to go there. That's a whole different sport and in a whole different country. But wet weather was definitely a bit of a downer.
We miss Missy. No, Missy.
We didn't get Missy, but she also fell off the stage and sprained her ankle. Did you see that?
Did she?
Yeah.
When was that?
It was beforehand. She fell off the stage and sprained her ankle.
When was she on the stage? Because I thought the whole point was that they couldn't...
Well, they did a sound... They have to do a sound check. So during
must
sound
have
check...
While I was splashing my way through puddles along Royal Parade.
Mm.
Yeah.
So during a sound check, she fell off the stage and sprained her ankle.
Oh, I hope she's pregnant. I hope she's okay.
I know, that's what I said. I was like, that's not a good thing to do when you're pregnant. But I think she's all okay. Her little son was entertaining her with a fashion show I saw while she lay on the couch recovering.
Gorgeous.
So that's really nice.
Is she a Geelong supporter, Missy? I know she's from Geelong.
She'd probably have to be if she's from Geelong.
Yeah.
So I did see the photo of her in like both scarves before the grand final. And
classic.
I was like, sense fence sitter?
Yep.
Interesting. Interesting. But no. But yeah, it was disappointing to see Missy. But what I'm sort of leading towards is, do you think we should have played this game at Etihad Stadium?
We've spoken about this before, and I reckon in the long run it was better that it was at Princess Park.
Mm.
Just because, like, we got just over 7,000.
Yeah.
Yes, it was weather affected, but I reckon they still would have been pushing it to sell out Princess Park.
Mm.
And if you got, say you got 15,000 at Etihad,
yeah,
that's not a great environment. It's really not. It's really... It's just not as exciting for some reason.
Reckon,
it's the dimensions of the ground and...
Do you reckon if...
We would have got a better spectacle? Is that what you're going for?
Well, maybe not better spectacle, but I think the fact... Even though there was, like, shuttle buses and all that kind of stuff, I do think there would have been more Brisbane fans that would have come because it was at... Like, the two games would have maybe overlapped. And also, like, a disclaimer. This is my disclaimer episode, but I hate... curtain raisers. Like, I really despise them because I don't really see the point in them sometimes.
Yeah.
But sometimes when I think with things like this, I think it would have worked in terms of, like, the layout of this, like, in the logistics of round one. Like, I think it would have just worked.
Sort of, except you've got to consider the fact that the St Kilda-Brisbane match is a ticketed affair.
Yeah.
And if they had it at Etihad, they may have had to ticket the women's, even if they wouldn't have had to pay for tickets.
Yeah.
Might have been, just buy one. What I mean.
Yeah.
But they would have had to clear out the stadium in the middle. They would have had to get everyone out and bring them all back in again.
Mm.
That is a logistical nightmare.
That is true. So, yeah, so the rain was a bit of a dampener, but I have to say it did not dampen the contest that we had out on the field. It was a bit of a slow first quarter, I think, just because of the conditions. But once that first quarter was done, I think the last three quarters really ramped up, especially that last quarter.
Interesting. Yeah, I thought that the second quarter was scoreless, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. It was so good to see Sophie Conway kick the first goal. She's such an exciting... I love seeing, like, just the enthusiasm she plays with. It's really fun to watch her play.
It is really fun.
I think Meg Hutchins put out on Twitter the day before the grand final, her pick for first goal was Sophie Conway. So
if you're
listening, congrats, Meg. Well done. But, yeah, she's definitely going to be... Like, I can see her being a 10-year player easy.
Yeah, easy. And then getting better every year, I think her goal sense and her... That will just improve over time. Because she's another dual athlete, came over from hockey.
Yeah.
As well. But
there's been a few hockey converts that are doing quite well.
Yeah, that is true. There was another one, Ash Utrey. She had a very good game as well. But I think for the Lions, you would probably just rue if you missed opportunities, I think. And I felt for Sabrina Frederick-Traub because she is such a player that she threw everything into that game. She threw absolutely everything at the ball, at the contest.
Just worst possible conditions for her.
Just exactly, the worst possible conditions. And it just seemed that despite all of her trying, nothing went her way.
Yeah, it was a really good effort from Lauren Spark. Also, Tiana Ernst was sort of just hanging back there, trying to fill the hole a bit, which, you know, it's a brave person to do that, to stand in front of Sabrina when she's in that sort of frame of mind, as you're saying, just throws herself at everything.
Yeah.
So they did a really good job. The conditions didn't suit great delivery into the forward 50. It was more of just a bomb and hope sort of day.
Yep.
That's just the way it is. It was for both sides. I thought Jess Wushner showed a lot late when it dried up. She was able to get a bit of a run at the ball.
Yep.
It was interesting. We spoke about last week what Hannah Scott would do, and she did line up on Jess Wushner.
Yes, she did, didn't she?
And sort of exposed her a little bit defensively. Jess's defensive game, I thought.
I think so. And I think Jess is a really good runner, in terms of getting herself into a contest.
Yes.
But I think she was held quite, despite the fact that she did have
those two goals. And they were really important.
Definitely very important goals. But I think, as you said, like, Tana Scott lined up and did a good job. I think the condition, like, this keeps coming up, but I do think the conditions did dictate the game. And I think the Western Bulldogs were very smart in that whenever they could, they went for goal, which is what you need to do in wet weather. And I felt a little bit like sometimes the Lions are trying to do too much.
Well, they do have that very delicate style of play, if you know what I mean. It's very deliberate, short kicks, lead up. Sort of a little bit like we saw... going back a bit, Sydney during that, going back a long way actually, like 2005, 2006, 2007, they're all, you know, if they didn't have the option inside 50, they'd look out elsewhere, lots of short little kicks. Brisbane playing a little bit of similar sort of style.
Yeah.
And that's not wet weather footy. But saying that, they adjusted much earlier than the Dogs did.
That's true.
And this has come out after the match, is that the Dogs coach has said it, numerous players have said it. They really struggled to change mindsets into wet weather footy. Mm. And that's what we saw after half time. They sort of, you know, threw the book out the window and just went, all right, you know, kick long, run hard, force the contest.
Yeah.
And that's what we saw after half time. Kicking off with Deanna Berry's goal. How good was that?
That was a very good goal. And I think I'm a very harsh critic of Deanna Berry.
She came through. I told you she'd come through.
She came through that game. And that goal was a game changer. And I think that really set up the Western Bulldogs to get that ascendancy in the last half, second half. But I also think a player who obviously has gone on to one best on ground was one of those players that Monique Conti... in that second half really came through.
She changed the game
in that third quarter. There was a period of time where Bulldogs were just kept trying to get it out of their forward 50, and somehow she was just always there and always with plenty of space as well. They just kept her out there on her own, and credit to Monique Conti, she used that space well, held it, and kept getting the ball back into the 50.
It's a real strength of her game, is her spatial awareness and, you know, basketball background.
Basketball, yeah.
I hate to say it, but it's true. It's really, really held her in really good stead. And we've talked about before how good her hands are, how well she marks for a person of her size. Just had a lot of composure about her, which I thought was really impressive from someone who's so young, who had very little pre-season sort of training, if you will. She was doing all her basketball commitments. And I asked her after the match, like she did the presser, what's next for Monique Conti? And she's like, oh, well, I have to take a few weeks off. And Paul Groves cut across. He's like, yes, you do. And she's like, no. And she just loves her sport.
She just wants to keep playing, which I totally understand that. And when you're in sort of the routine of it all, you just wouldn't. You'd be like, oh, well, next week is a new week and a new week to do something else. Probably for her as well. But I think I was with my young cousin Oscar, who's 14, and I said to him after the game, I said, I think Monique Conti will win best on ground, but I think also it's unlikely but probable and probably deserving if Kate Luckins also took out the best on ground. And it's always very hard for someone on the opposing team to win it when you lose.
Yeah.
But Kate Luckins set a new record, 20 intercepts, I'm pretty sure.
Something like that.
And she was, again, a force to be reckoned with like she has been this season.
Yeah, it's really interesting the way the Lions have done this because it's sort of like, memo? What memo? Like, they just, they line up in the 5-6-5 formation and immediately then roll a spare back, forcing Luckins to become that spare in defence.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep, I getcha.
Yep. So someone on the wing or whatever will hop back, take Luckins' player, and all of a sudden Luckins is loose in defence once again. She was so, so impressive.
Yes.
She reads the ball really well.
Mm.
I think hands down the most improved player in the competition.
I'm with you on that one. I
think probably Christina Bernardi's probably one who another might one, come yeah. close, but Luckins for sheer consistency.
Yes. I think there was only one, probably one game, which was that game against the Bulldogs in the regular season, where she didn't have much of an effect. And
she was busy dealing with Katie Brennan and Isabel Huntington, yeah, that's why.
Exactly. And every other game, she just was the wall, like she was just the wall for Brisbane and got it out so many times, and just was a real sort of also a creative back as well. She started so many plays from back there as well, which I was super impressed with as considering she's playing more like a fullback and not like a halfback sort of kind of role. And as you said, the consistency of her season was something to behold, and the fact that she did not let the grand final overawe her in those conditions and the way that the Bulldogs were playing was also something very impressive.
She's not a concrete wall. She's a rubber trampoline wall.
Mm, that's a good way of putting it, actually. Yeah.
It just bounces straight back.
Yeah.
But bounces at an angle that is creative and, you know, works to the Lions' advantage.
Yes.
If that analogy works.
Yeah. Because with the Lions' small, quick midfield.
Yeah.
And players who use the ball very well, like Bates and Zilke, that path out of the defence, that worked really well for them. And I like that the Bulldogs were so able to play to their strength. But I just really feel for them that they just could not get it done.
Yeah, 6 points, 2 weeks, 2 weeks, 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
That's just devastating.
That is so hard. And I thought Zilke was very good afterwards. Her speech afterwards was very composed.
It was really impressive.
And it was very, very, it was very nice. But it's good to have the AFLW Cup back in Victoria. And I have to say, shout out to Sue Alberti, you did it. Like, your club's got a premiership for all of their teams now, for the VFL, for the AFL, and now the AFLW.
Yeah, we'll see if Debbie Lee can, the challenge is on, if she can get the Western Bulldogs up in the VFLW season that starts in May.
Then, oh.
And that'll be like four premierships in 3 years.
3 years, yeah. Which is, that's a huge start. So they're doing something right down at the Doggies.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
not quite.
Not quite with the AFL team at the moment. But, you know, it's a long season, so they might bounce back.
Yeah, you never know. GWS could destroy every single team.
Exactly. They might be.
Hopefully they won't,
no. As I think I've said this to you before, I just have a real thing about GWS winning. Like, I just don't know why. The new team, like, please don't. But that's a story for another day. But I think we have been treated again to another great grand final in the AFLW, a huge contest, and I think like all of the games come down to the wire. And with the season now obviously at an end, whereas there's been a lot of talk about decongesting the game, changing the rules, all that kind of thing, what's your take on all of this?
That's a big question. There are so many facets to it. I reckon I'm with, like, Kate McCarthy tweeted something in the last few days, Lions forward, midfielder, defender, whatever you want to call her. She's very versatile. And she's also very eloquent.
Yes.
And she is firmly on the side of more training.
Yeah.
Simple as that. Skills are not going to lift until these players get more time with their coaches, with their teammates, on the track. And you can't improve congestion until you can improve skills.
Yep.
So give these girls more hours of training, give them more games. Give them more games, for God's sake. Yeah. A longer season, I would love that. And people are worried that it'll clash with the men's, like, you know, be overshadowed by the men's. The real focus on the men's comes at round one.
Yeah.
It comes at Anzac Day. What I'm saying is it comes and goes.
Yeah.
So it's not going to be completely overshadowed by the men's at all, I don't think.
Either.
And imagine if we had, like, you know, come... You'd have to shift the season a bit, but I'm just coming up with an idea at the top of my head. Bye rounds in the men's season. Mm. How boring are they?
Yeah, that's true.
Imagine if we had the finals for AFLW season during then.
That is a good point that you've raised there. And I think I can vouch for Kate McCarthy's sort of hypotheses there, in that the biggest example of something like that improving in very quickly in a short amount of time, I think, is the WBBL. They had their first season in 2000 and, I'm trying to remember what it was, 2015. Yes, 2015 was their first season. The skill level from there to now is almost incomparable. The stat is something like 1-6 a season to at least 2 a game.
Wow.
In just 3 years.
Yeah.
And that is purely because they're getting paid more. And they're training more, and they're playing more games, and so I think with cricket and the way that they've done it, I think they've really invested, and they've invested really hard in the women's game, and it's having such a huge effect on the product that is being put out. And I think that is that's an international thing with women's cricket as well. The Southern Stars are playing against India and England at the moment, and they've had Danny Wyatt for England has hit 2 T20 centuries in the last 6 months. I think Virat Kohli has yet to hit a century in T20 cricket. So that's a pretty good stat. But that would literally come down to the fact that they're getting paid more and they're training more. And
there's no sandpaper in sight.
And exactly. Well, that too. Yes, exactly. And as you said, it's like it's almost that easy. Like, you just need to invest in the game and give it more time.
Yeah. Mm. It's hard because we're in this sort of environment where you want results quickly, and you know, this is in every facet of life. It's, you know, Twitter, we want something instantly.
Yeah.
We're not in the mind frame anymore of waiting and being patient. So you have, you know, sponsors and investors who are sort of, who want to see immediate return on their investment, which is sort of fair enough. But yeah, it's take a risk by not taking a risk. You know what I mean?
I get what you mean. And I think when you mentioned like sponsors and things like that, if you've read Sam Lane's book, Roar, you'll know that like Brisbane Lions, for example, had to turn down sponsors. Like that's the high level of interest in the women's game at the moment, that they had to be like, oh, I'm really sorry, but we already have all our sponsors. Like, sorry, we can't take your money. Yeah. like imagine, there's people that want to invest in this game, and there's so many people that want to invest in it to see it prosper and grow. So if you think it's like AFLW is like taking everyone's money, or like no one is interested in it, well, you're kind of wrong, because there's plenty of people who want to invest in it. And
I think just because they're different to the traditional AFL, you know, people who are interested, companies who are interested, that doesn't necessarily mean it's wrong. Mm. Like, you see Priceline and the Pancake Parlour are the Bulldogs sponsors.
Yeah. Like, that's fine.
Yeah.
I love that. Exactly. And if anything, it's like it expands the scope for more sponsorships. For people who can't get involved at AFL clubs, for example, they can now sort of get in at another level with AFLW. And
money's money. It doesn't matter who it's coming from.
Yep, exactly. And so I think Kate's point there is one of the ones that is very pertinent, and that they just need more. They need to have more time around a club. They need to be paid more so that they can get. And she said, don't expect a professional outcome if we're only getting semi-professional conditions.
Like Jess Wooshner a few weeks ago, I know we're talking a lot about the Lions, but, you know, they're a really strong AFLW club. They're relevant.
They're exactly. Strong club, and also they're allowed. They speak their minds a lot, which I love. So continue, sorry.
But Jess Wooshner a few weeks ago tweeted that she had to go to work the night of the match that they played. I think it was the game against Fremantle. It was one of those shocking rain ones. And then she worked on the docks all night after playing in, you know, a monsoon during the day. It's just which ridiculous.
Which is crazy.
How can you expect to perform? Not saying that Jess, you know, she's a gun player.
Yeah.
But imagine how good she could be if she could have a proper night's sleep, like day, you know, after she's played a
recover
full game
properly,
of footy.
Exactly. And come back and train properly. And
it's
all
unrealistic
that kind of
expectations.
And that's the thing that I think a lot of people forget is that it is unrealistic expectations. I feel like the people that are watching it with their with negative views are sort of like, well, they're getting blah blah blah. Like people are saying they should be paid more, but this is what they're doing. Like they don't deserve to be paid if they're kicking 4 goals in a game. And it's like, well, you need to pay them more if you want to see them kick more goals in a game. Like that's,
yep.
There is probably a direct correlation in getting paid more and results and skills and stuff improving.
Yep.
I'm not a scientist and that has not been proven, but I feel like when, as I said, from the example with cricket, you would see that. But I also think we're in a tough time with AFLW and women's footy as a whole in that we're in a very transitionary period as well. But we're still developing the pathways. We're still growing. We're still identifying talent in all the competitions around the country. And so it's still going to be a good 2 years until we sort of solidify all of that as well.
Maybe even longer, because it's great that so many clubs have jumped on the AFLW train. And we're going to have a 14-team competition in 2020.
Yeah.
Whether we've got the talent to support that at the minute, that's like, you know, it's the standard. I think the improvement will be balanced out by the fact that we're going to have a lot more players, if you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we may not see an overall improvement because we're spreading the talent across 14 teams as opposed to 8. So, you know, this is a 10-year thing. Like, we've got to buckle ourselves in for the long ride. We've got to, you know, mute those crazies on Twitter.
That is true. And also invest a bit more. And everyone get around the fact that AFLW will soon become a ticketed event, which I think is important for the game as well. But we'll stop that, because in my chat with Scott Gowans, we actually spoke a lot about sort of where women's footy is heading and his opinions of sort of the decongestion rules are going to be brought into the VFLW this year, and also about the North Tasmania partnership, which has sort of been a little bit of a...
It's been lost a little bit, I think.
Yeah, it's a bit of an enigma in the sort of their joining of the AFL. So sit back and enjoy my conversation with Scott Gowans. And so, as I should mention the disclaimer again, Scott is my coach at footy. So if we sound a bit chummy or he mentions, and that's you too, Luce, that's because he is my coach. But it was a very good conversation and we thank Scott so much for his time. Thank you so much for joining me on Credit to the Girl, Scott. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Yes, very well, thank you. And I suppose first, a lot of people would probably want to know what's your background in maybe AFL broadly, and then how did you get into women's football?
Yep, so I was very lucky to be part of the inaugural Carlton AFLW team with you, Luce, which was a great experience, and I did defence. And I was the senior assistant to Damien Keeping, so really enjoyed that. And then obviously got the opportunity to interview for the North job in October last year, and moved to North. As far as women's footy, did Diamond Creek Senior Women's last year, and then also did Vic Country, so which was great because it gave me the perspective of youth girls as well as senior women. And then the year before that, did Vic Country again, but also did the Dandy Stingrays Youth Girls Academy. And then prior to that, Vic Metro as an assistant coach, and my first year at Dandy Stingrays. So that was sort of 3 or 4 year period through girls footy.
And did you start in women's football, or did you come from sort of men's and boys?
Yeah, it came from pretty traditional pathway. So boys, juniors at, well, actually I started my first coaching job was actually when I was 24, so very young, captain coach, and knew nothing about coaching and not much about playing either. But that was in New South Wales, up at a place called Kiama, which is on the south coast, and ended up, I was pretty much the only bloke that could play footy because the rest was made up of rugby league boys, and we didn't win a game. But it was a great experience, and kind of, I suppose that's actually where I got my taste for coaching. And then from there really had a break from coaching, finished my playing career, concentrated on a business we were running and bringing the family up, And then when the boys sort of started playing footy under 11s, got to coach that side and went right through the age groups with the boys till under 16s, and then stepped back into senior footy coaching with Dean Rice, who played at St Kilda and Carlton, at Berwick, then Longwarry and Gippsland footy. And while I was at Longwarry was when the youth girls program, I met Shiloh Curtis through that. She offered me the job at Vic Metro and Dandy Stingrays, and that's how it all sort of started. So really up until last year, for the previous 3 years, I was doing senior men's footy, youth girls and state footy all in the same time, so three coaching jobs, so which was pretty much what I'm doing now, working full-time in footy.
Yeah, and I suppose coming from men's football into women's or girls, was there something about it that you really liked? And I know that sort of, I think Damien Keeping has sort of said that when he started coaching girls, it was kind of like an epiphany moment, just like, oh, this is like so much, not better, but almost different in a good way. Did you feel that?
Yeah, it did. I know exactly what he means because we've actually spoken about this. When you coach junior boys, as they get older, they start to get a little bit more competitive. So you're naturally feeding off them, even though you're still the teacher, you do feed off it a bit. So when I stepped into doing senior men's footy, which is very, you know, robust and aggressive type, the boys like to be G'd up, and not that the girls don't, but it was just that sort of mindset that everything had to be done at a high intensity. But, you know, looking back on it now, I actually think that what the youth girls programs and senior women's footy has done, it actually gets you back to what you do coach for, which is to teach. So in men's footy, that empathy level's not there. It's all about the best, the fastest, the quickest, who can hit the hardest type of thing. But in girls' footy, they actually want the knowledge. So while your coach is to teach, and I just find the women's footy so rewarding from that perspective, there's still times that you get, you know, your frustrations and things like that, but I find that it teaches you to keep your wits about you, and does keep it in a growth mindset and a learning environment that I speak about all the time. So I think it's a more pure form of coaching in the women's footy.
It's really interesting to say that it's a more pure type of coaching. And then so from that, what do you see in the women's game?
Yeah, because if you think about it, you can get a 25-year-old guy in senior men's footy, and that 25-year-old has basically played about the same amount of footy. There might be one or two in the squad that have come in when they were 18, but very rarely do they walk in first game of senior footy. But in women's footy, that 25-year-old girl, she might be playing with some girls that have played 200 games of footy, but there also could be five or six of them that have never played footy before. So your coaching needs to be at a level where you can teach the kicking, the marking, the handball. Classic example with Chloe Malloy, kicking in from full back, she'd know you had to tap the ball on your foot to play on. So when you think about it, you're actually going right back to what you taught in under 11s with rules and things like that to senior players. But then you've also got to cater for the girl that's played 200 games of footy, like a Steph Chiocci, and give them the level of coaching. So it tests you as a coach because you've got to go right through the spectrum. It's not about just turning up on a Saturday and coaching, you know, that group of guys that have played for so long and, you know, have a game plan that suits that. It's a testing thing. But what I think I've noticed in the women's footy with all that is that the thirst for knowledge is there. So no matter if they have played the 200 games or they're in their first game, they all want to learn. They all want to improve.
And do you see sort of this thing with the teaching of the skills and having to cater to a broad range of players, is that a detriment to the quality of the football, or do you think that is something that will change over time?
I think, being honest, it probably is at this stage, but I reckon we're in a transition period with that, because particularly in the VFL, so I reckon this year in the VFL you'll find the last player picked each week will be a development spot, but that development spot won't be that they can't kick, mark or handball. It'll be that they've been taught that, but they're still developing. Whereas in the past, maybe 2 years ago when I started getting into it, that last position on the list, that actually might be that they've only got the one side. So that last girl might be because they had to fill the side and they've just got her from a friend of a friend type of thing. So it's you can tell that the depth is growing, but what that does is it, because they as the last player on the list gets better and better and better, what happens at the top end is they improve as well because the ball's moving better and it's predictable and everything like that. So I just think that the standard, well, I can tell anyway from when I first started in girls footy, has improved dramatically.
And with that, what did you make of this second AFLW season, maybe compared to the last? Because there's obviously a lot of stuff has been said about it. Stephen Hocking is talking about major changes of the game. What have you made of this season?
Yeah, definitely the skill level's improved. I think if you just look at the stats that we get on CIA with Champion Data, the average possession chain went up from about 2.8 before a turnover to over 4 this year. So that improved. So they're moving the ball a little bit better. Average possessions per game went up from 205 to 220 something. So possessing the ball a bit more. Marks went up through the roof. So the ball movement and everything like that's getting better, and the skill level. So the scoring went up. So you can definitely see that it's improving. Having said that, though, I still think that with anti-density rules that they're talking about and bringing that in, I'm actually a fan of it. Some of the coaches aren't, but I actually am, because I think anything that improves the movement of the ball will then flow on to improve the players overall. So if you look up, you win the ball forward of the centre and you haven't got a forward to kick it to, you panic a little bit, and or you go sideways and you turn it over, and everyone goes, oh, well, they turned the ball over. But if they had nowhere to go, it's not natural just to kick to grass. So I think that by having that, at least will solve the problem, because a lot of the sides, and Carlton are probably one of these sides that suffered a little bit of delivering the ball up forward, and it was the same in year one when I was there as well. But I think with these new rules that they're talking about, and they're going to trial it in the VFL, you will find that the scoring will go up a lot more as well. So, and I reckon that's healthy. That's healthy for crowds, healthy for the players. Not so healthy for the coaches, but it makes you just think a little bit more. Yeah.
What about the cry of like people who are saying, let them just play football? It's like girls have gotten into this because they want to play football. They see the game being played in its purest form. Why can they just not play it in its purest form?
Yeah, well, I still think that it is. It's still that, there's still the contest. You can still get hit from 360 degrees. You need to have a certain level of toughness to play footy and resilience. And all those attributes that the game's built on, I think it will still be there. It's just that what we're going to do is almost hybrid the game to increase the talent base and make that talent base come through a bit quicker. So it might be something that, over this next transition period, as the AFL is expanding so quickly, and you've got to remember that we're dragging so many new girls into the football world that the level of coaching can't keep up. So as the coaches come up and coach AFL and VFL and TAC, what it's happening at community level is we're dragging all that coaching out of those teams, and the mums and dads are doing the coaching. So it's a matter of fast-tracking all that. And I think by bringing something in like anti-density and AFL level, the more exciting it makes, the more opportunity for girls to come into the game and play at a higher standard, so there are more crowds, more revenue, the whole thing like that. So I just think it's almost like you almost need to say, okay, for the next 3 or 4 years, this is what we're doing it while we're in a growth phase. Once every side in the AFL has a team, we can then go hell for leather, and it's all about winning and everything like that. But we all have an obligation to the game at the moment over this next little period to realise, yeah, we all want to win, but we also have a really big piece of what we all do, you included, Luce, in this, in helping that, if you like, the foundation, putting a little bit more into the foundation of football. And I think by bringing anti-density and a few little hybrid rules in it, does no harm at all.
Yep. What about the factor of time? Is that something that's just going to take time as well?
Yeah, I think it is. You mean as in?
Just like years.
Years, yeah. Yeah, I don't see how you get around that, because this draft coming up has got the first or the second lot. There were a couple of girls from this year's draft, but it's really the core group of these girls have been through a TAC program for 2 or 3 years, and they've followed a pathway. So a lot of the talent that's come in the first draft was really dragged out of community footy. So they perhaps their level of football ability was really good, but their things underneath that with the standards and all the RPEs and the GPSs and everything that like that we talk about, some of them hadn't been exposed to that, and it takes a little bit getting used to. So I think with this bunch coming through now, they're going to be really the first lot that are all used to that type of stuff. And what that does do, it increases, although their football ability won't be equal and physically they won't be equal to a girl that's played 10 years of community footy, but because they recover quicker, they're faster, they're stronger, less likely to do an injury like an ACL because they've developed and learned to do bands and things like that. So I just think that natural progression will happen. And if you think in 3 years' time, when you've had three drafts like come through of those type of kids, what that bottom end, that's going to give you a really good foundation for a competition. It's going to be quick, they're going to hit harder, and they're going to move the ball better. So, yeah, then I think you review whatever rules you bring in and say, okay, well, maybe we go back to doing it the other way. Maybe we increase it to 18 a side, I don't know. But, I just think that the time factor is something we're probably not going to get over. I think it's going to take 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, and that is the hardest part. I think time is always the hardest part. Do you think you're in a position of advantage having this time to sort of go through VFL season with certain players that you may have your eye on and watch other players before you go into the competition next year?
Yeah, definitely. It's a huge advantage. In the next couple of weeks, next week, we submit a list to the AFL. And it's basically just a wish list, other than the girls that we know we're going to get. But gives us the ability to do is to watch the VFL, the VAFA, which will be a very strong competition this year, and then any community leagues that have a couple of girls floating around that could possibly come up. AFL Vic have structured the competition that you can make list changes this year to accommodate that type of thing. And they've also structured it so that you've got to have 5 TAC girls on your list. Each VFL club has to do that. So they're almost manufacturing the list to cope with that growth that I was talking about, but also accommodate for the girl that pops up and, never played footy before, as a cross-code athlete, goes and plays at, Beaconsfield or Ivanhoe or wherever she's going to play, and stars. So you can bring her in as a 23rd player this year to the VFL. And obviously we've got the Tasmanian component here at Melbourne Union North, so that's a whole beast in its own. It's so exciting. A lot of people tend to talk it down a little bit, but I think they're missing the point that the talent they look at is the current talent. They're not actually realising that the amount of girls that are flowing into the game and how that existing talent's developed, because they've now got the taste and can see that carrot at the end of there, and where they're going to go, I'm going to grab that. So there's 4 or 5 girls that perhaps other clubs looked at and said, oh no, because of conditioning, or no, she can't, her kicking's not great. They're a very different athlete to what they were 12 months ago, which is super exciting.
Mm. Yeah, can you tell us a bit about the Tasmania connection in terms of, is it sort of like the Adelaide Northern Territory, or is it a completely different thing?
No, very similar. So we want to have a base down there. We're just not sure where the base will be at this stage. But we want to have coaching down there, medical backup, the whole thing, so that when North is training up here and we have 10, 12 girls down there or whatever the number might be, that they're doing the same things. But more importantly, they have the same resources available to them. So obviously it's a little bit different, and some of the game plan teaching will be done over the internet and using different technologies, but we'll spend it, they'll come up here for a fair bit of time, we'll go down there, so logistically I think it'll work really well. But I've just been so surprised at, because I really had no knowledge of what went on down in the TSL at all, particularly TSLW. Mm-hmm. From what I've learned, the people involved down there that just want to make this a success, it's amazing. And I'm going down there next week, for instance, and you get the itinerary of what they've got planned for you, and you just shake your head and go, how good is this? Because it's the people down there are pushing the athletes in the right way. The under 18s look quite strong, so they've got a really good group of girls to choose from, and I just think it's super exciting to have a state where you can pick from, because really if they nominate for Tasmania, then they're yours. If they're the best player in the country, you can take them right down the bottom end of the draft.
And I suppose what that makes me think of is obviously there's all reports of a football crisis in Tasmania. And a lot of what I think about with women's football is that it is sort of that last area of growth, and in a lot of ways I think it will save or grow AFL in places where they just thought they couldn't grow it. For example, Queensland and places like that. Do you see women's football as almost like almost an advantage or silver lining of crises like this?
Yeah, absolutely. And how typical, if you look at and read anything in the history of the world, most of the time the thing that solves it is women. So it's funny about that. But no, you're absolutely right. And what it will do, and I spoke before about the empathy and things, because there's an old saying that Charlotte Curtis told me this, that boys, males think with one side of the brain, girls think with two. So you're actually better off if you've got a problem going and talk to a female. So I actually think that what you'll find is that Tasmanian football in general, they speak about the crisis, and yeah, there's some issues going on there, but you know, if when you get down there, the issues are different to what they were in the past. So in the past, you might have this bickering between North and South and all the rest of it, but now everyone sort of works in together, and yeah, there's still issues to sort out. But the difference now is that you've got, you know, Trish Squires down there, female, yeah, who's getting everyone around a table, and they're talking about things. And a lot of it's to do with support, more than, you know, you pinch this player or that player, that type of thing. So it's more around the support from above, from AFL. I know from a North perspective, and Hawthorn too, to their credit, we all try and put in as much as we can down there. And I just enjoy it. I enjoy that you speak to the TSLW coaches, and they're so passionate about developing girls, and you know, to the point where they talk about now not about their wins and losses, but how many they can get drafted, for instance. And I love that. That's fantastic. And Lee Elder does a mountain of work down there, and he's the talent development manager down there for the girls. And you know, the work that he puts in with his listing girls and getting them into academies and giving them program-based stuff, it's really exciting to see. And again, I just think to myself, in 2 or 3 years' time, how strong that will be down there when a 16-year-old girl who's now identified goes, plays under-18s or 16s this year, a couple of years of under-18s, and then is draftable. Now she's going to be in a really good spot to put her hand up and say, yep, I'm not actually just getting drafted because I'm Tasmanian, I'm getting drafted because I'm good. Yeah. And it's a big difference. And I think with Queensland and all the rest of it, I'll bet you any money with the Gold Coast coming in, that it helps solve what's going on up there. I can just see it. And it might just be through the females managing the program. It could be through the growth. The Queensland talent coming through in their 16s and 18s programs, unbelievable. So they have to bring another team in there, because everyone goes, why are they putting Gold Coast in? Well, it's because Brisbane will be unbeatable in 2 years' time. That's why. So I think you'll find the natural pathway will be that the female program will grow so much, it'll actually drag the boys' program along with it.
Yeah, and that's super exciting. And I think, looking at that, how do you see what's next year or the remainder of the year look like for North, and then how do you see the first season of North sort of playing out?
Yeah. Well, we're going to win. That's the I've been watching the Bulldogs hold the cup up just so I know how to do it.
Oh my god.
Not really, I'm joking. Now look, I think what will happen is you'll find that the Melbourne Uni, who have been involved in, I've been so lucky, I was at Diamond Creek, amazing club, come to Melbourne Uni, and just it's an amazing club as well. So I'm now assuming that every female club's like this. But I think with Laura Kane, you know, it's the president of Melbourne Uni, that she just has that balance of personality. And what it does is the players that we get now will experience that empathy that I talked about and everything like that, and the way that it's done through Melbourne Uni. Step in, and whether they step in as a 23rd player or whether they play all season with Melbourne Uni is irrelevant, but once they're touched by it, they'll realise that that's what that culture, that piece is what we're going to take to North. And that even though North will be a separate beast to Melbourne Uni next year, because it'll have its own VFL team, But that core, that those values, will be developed further, but they'll be taken from what Melbourne Uni's growing, so which I think is a really good base to grow from.
For sure, and I sort of feel that the first season, there's a little bit of, like, we're sort of going with the flow, like, as you said, a lot of girls aren't used to the RPEs and that whole sort of professional environment. Girls getting a lot more used to it this year, and it felt like there's a lot more girls who were settled and into it. Do you think you're behind the eight ball now going in, or do you still believe that you can be a very competitive side next season?
At North or Melbourne Uni?
North.
North, yeah, definitely. So the plan is to win North Series, and that's what we want to do, we want to win.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I just think that if we can get it right as far as not going and picking the best 20 players in the country, we actually pick, you know, a team to play football. So it's key, because if you look at all the teams, and I was part of the first Carlton list build as well, and we kept talking about, you know, we're going to play this girl here, but, you know, she's so good, let's take another one and play her down back or whatever the case might be, or up forward. And that works to a point. But I think, too, that just looking at the way Melbourne and the Bulldogs did it, they really crafted their list quite cleverly. And I don't know, I just felt that the way to do it is not actually pick the best 20 players. It's actually pick players in positions, have a backup, and then at the end of it, rather than going at the top, but at the end of it, you pick players that might be hybrid-type players. So I'm really confident. We've got Reece Harwood here, whose sole mission is to build the AFLW list, and he's really good, and he's spent a lot of time on vision and doing just that. I've explained the way I want to play, and he's gone out and tried to get players like that. And it's funny, because, you know, if you had have said to me who are your top three players in the league, and I said to you, you know, Bree Davey, Daisy Pearce, and Karen Paxman, for instance, well, my natural reaction, or your natural reaction, is you're going to get them all. Well, so, no, we're not actually going to talk to all of them, because there won't only be one particular player in that group that we go, we need a halfback flanker, or we need a, you know, centre half back, or whatever it might be. We won't double up on the talent. We'll just get the right people for the right job.
It's a very interesting way of going about it, but I definitely agree with you that the teams that do well are the teams that have every position filled with the best possible person, and not so much the best players.
Yeah, and I think Adelaide did the same.
Yeah.
They did exactly that, and I was part of it. I sat there at the table, and we looked at everyone's list, and we gone, oh, what have they done, you know?
Yeah.
Everyone picked on Melbourne in year one,
yeah.
But look how well they did. They just missed out. So I just think it's a better way to build a team from scratch. And, you know, you can pick informed players now, or you can pick players that a lot of it is projection, so you're making projections on players and talent and things like that. But, you know, we've narrowed it down right to, you know, left-footers versus right-footers. I'm very keen on having left-footers in certain positions. So, we think we've done enough homework to be competitive right from the start. And I know people will probably laugh at us with the Tasmanian component. They think, oh, they've got to have half their list from Tasmania. Well, we'll see who's laughing in a couple of years' time.
Very good point. Well, I think that's all the questions I have for you. Thank you so much, Scott, for your time.
No worries, Lise. Very good.
Thank you so much to Scott Gowans for his time. Very enlightening chat with him on everything sort of heading into the future for AFLW, because he's going to be part of the future. He's been a part of it, but now he's more future AFLW, which is nice.
Yeah, you keep putting your hands up in the air when you say future. I'm half expecting a little, like, shimmery,
yeah,
the future.
It's like a cosmic,
yeah,
like, thing that's, yeah, going on. But no, very, thank you very much to Scott for that chat.
Oh, just quickly, speaking of the future,
yes,
just to chuck this in here, Carlton putting their coach's job on Seek.
Well, yes, but you do have to legally advertise a job. So legally you have to advertise a job before you give it to someone. Like, even if,
yeah,
you've got someone in mind, or you're giving it to someone, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, it's a bit weird, but, like, it's a legal obligation.
Yeah.
So, you know,
yeah,
but, you know, they may find someone from that ad placement.
Definitely. There's probably some hidden gem out there in a country league who's, you know,
yeah,
going to come and just totally revamp the place. And
you said it.
Yeah. But I would if you're the coach, mm-hmm. would you expect more than a 20% discount at the Carlton store?
Oh, I think so, because also at like every place, it's always more than 20%. It's always like 40 or 50.
I got 50 at Macca's, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly. So I think 20%. I think they need to up that. Nike, you're not
obviously
that important.
Obviously, you'd be given a lot of merch and stuff.
Yeah,
like
that's
you'd be
true.
Given your polos to wear. And
yeah. But I want to get down in the Nike store, you know what I mean?
And these are the articles I need to be writing, clearly.
Yeah, exactly. You need to change your track, Sarah. Get in on the AFLW gossip column.
The day we get an AFLW gossip column is the day we know the competition has made it.
This is true. This is true.
You know, like on the, was it the Score in the Herald Sun?
Oh, yeah,
Sun?
On the Herald yep. Sun, yeah.
And the Whisper column down the Whisper.
They have included a little bit of AFLW gossip in it over the last few months, but there's always room for more, you know. But coming around now to another big event that happened this week, which was, of course, the AFLW's Best
w
and Fairest
Awards.
W Awards, which... A night of glam. It's always good to see the players glammed up
yes.
and out of their playing strip and training clothes
yes.
and their hair done, out of the top knot.
Definitely. There were very few top knots, actually. Mm. It was all the trend seemed to be down and wavy,
ooh,
I think. Yeah.
Love a trend.
Yes.
Not a lot. Was there a lot of red on the carpet?
There was a bit. There was a lot of black lace.
Oh, black lace.
And that's, I'm getting out of my comfort zone here. I just, fashion and me, I'm like, I don't know. Looks
I
nice.
Love judging
I'll wear
fashion.
It.
I love the movie awards, like, award season.
Yeah.
Because I love judging the fashion, which is like, so does not match up with like my personality and I'm probably who people think I am, but
yeah.
Love it. Love it so much. But I think all of the girls looked amazing, looked incredible. I don't know if I have a best dress. I think Ali Blackburn looked amazing.
She did.
She looked beautiful.
As did Katie Brennan.
As did Katie Brennan, of course.
Sabrina looked really, really nice.
But I think the list could just go on and on.
Yes.
But the main awards, obviously, this night was the big one, the best and fairest. We found out our rising star of the year, which we mentioned earlier. But also, we got to narrow down the All-Australian squad into the All-Australian team, which I think we'll touch on first. And I am so glad that Chelsea Randall was made captain.
Yes, as am I. I was sitting on the table behind the Adelaide Brains Trust. So
yes.
We had Beck Goddard, some of the senior players, Courtney Cramey and Ange Foley, and a few others, Crows administrators, and they were so excited to see Chelsea Randall. I think it's really well deserved, too.
I think it's so deserved.
Because she dragged that team kicking and screaming this year.
Yes, she definitely did. She was the difference in so many games
yep.
for Adelaide. And just her just willingness to never stop and never give up and her just competitive nature, I think, was a force to be reckoned with.
And off the field as well, just her sheer enthusiasm for the game. It's
yep.
really, if you get a chance to listen to her being interviewed, she spoke so well upon being presented as captain. And she just, yeah, it makes you feel really, really happy and really positive listening to her. So I can't imagine what it'd be like playing under her. So, Liz, can you quickly run us through the defence, the five defenders we've got?
Sure can. At fullback, Chloe Malloy, Kate Lutkins, halfback, Hannah Scott, Chelsea Randall as captain, and Ebony Antonio.
That is a fearsome defensive unit.
That is a fearsome defensive unit. And I think Chloe Malloy, well-deserved place back there, as is Kate Lutkins, who we spoke at length about before. But Chloe Malloy, coming into the AFLW playing in defence after spending the VFL season as a forward and
yep.
being the leading goal kicker, I think a lot of people thought this may be a surprise move for Chloe Malloy. But
I think it shows that Wayne Seekman's versatility, that paid off. It definitely did.
It definitely did in the end with some players. With Chloe
Malloy. I reckon a lot of them because we got Jess. Oh, we'll talk about this in another podcast. We'll go through
yeah.
all the teams and stuff. But Jess Duffin played really well in defence.
True.
Jazzy Garner.
True.
It livened up her season, I think,
yep.
when she returned to the forward line. She was a better player. Anyway, yep, that's Collingwood for another time.
But Chloe Malloy did such an exceptional job in fullback, and it was evident from her first game that she was going to do well back there. Hannah Scott is another player we've spoken at length. Chelsea Randall, spoken about at length. But Ebony Antonio, I think, is one that might have slipped under a lot of people's radars.
Yeah.
But very deserving to have that spot there in the team.
Definitely. If you had Chelsea Randle and Ebony Antonio in the same lineup, it's not many teams would be messing with you. Like, oh, imagine being a forward. Mm. You've got Antonio and Randle bearing down you. Terrifying. Yep. Very, like, similar players.
Very similar, definitely.
Yeah, just uncompromising.
So, formidable backline there. But then in the centre, we have Dana Hooker, Emma Carney and Alicia Eva. Dana Hooker, a bit of a breakout season for her, even though she's a bit of a veteran of the game.
Yeah.
She sort of played the Cara Donnellan role at Freo this year, where Cara was like their out-and-out sort of star. Dana Hooker was probably their most consistent performer for the year.
And she's so versatile too. Mm. Like, each week I do like the team of the week for the website and I'd be like, where do I put Dana Hooker? Do I put her forward? Like, she kicked two goals. Or do I put her in the middle? Or, you know, she spent a lot of time in defence.
Mm.
Like, incredible player. And got a few best ons during the vote count, which I think was well deserved.
Yes,
and
definitely.
Alicia Eva as well took her game to new heights playing for the Giants.
Yes, she definitely did. Alicia Eva was sort of, she led very much from the front as vice-captain for the Giants. And just like, yeah, took her season at the Giants from where it left off sort of with Collingwood, but I think the new surroundings and the new team did her a whole world of good up there. And of course Emma Carney is there as well, who we will talk about very soon.
Yeah, we'll just skip over Emma for now.
Yeah, just no big deal.
Yeah.
But at half forward we have Elise O'Day, Sabrina Frederick-Traub, Brooke Lachlan, and at full forward Jess Wushner and Christina Bernardi. And Bernardi is another one, like Dana Hooker, sort of broke out as well this season. One of Collingwood's most consistent forwards, kicked a bag of goals a few games.
Yeah.
And was just so, like, she just performed so well on many occasions and was a game changer in the particularly important games of the Melbourne game and Brisbane
yes.
as well.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she played well against the Dogs as well. She had a real purple patch in the second half of the season. Her marking, I think, sets her apart. Yes, she gets on the scoreboard, but she is a quality contested mark, and that is as rare as hen's teeth in the men's women's game.
Yes.
I'm having trouble separating the two at the minute. I'm right at that juncture at work where I'm, just finishing off the women's, starting on the men's. Yep.
Getting into that transition. But yes. Jess Wushner, another deserving place at full forward. She's so lethal up there.
In the unique position of being the competition's leading goal kicker after the grand final, but not before the grand final.
Ooh.
So Brooke Lachlan got the medal for leading goal kicker, well deserved after her seven goal haul especially, but she did finish with 12, so consistent.
Yes.
Consistent. Jess Wushner on 11, but her two goals in the granny takes her to 13 for the season. So a bit unlucky there, I think, Jess, especially as Bonnie Toogood has come, you know, sort of said after the match that one of Lachlan's seven goals was touched by her.
Oopsie.
Yeah, in which case Jess Wushner might feel a little bit hard done by that she wasn't granted equal leading goal kicker.
But, you know, all Australian selection maybe should soothe that a little bit, but probably not as much as a premiership medal could, but that's okay.
The one that raised eyebrows was Elise O'Day on a half-forward flank. But it was mentioned that she was the leading inside 50 getter, deliverer,
yes,
if you know what I mean. For the competition. So
I think that makes sense. I think it makes sense. I think Elise O'Day, especially in the second half of the season, scored a few crucial goals as well, sort of from that flank position coming in.
Yeah, I can almost see her in my mind just hovering in that area of the ground.
Yeah, so you know what I mean. So it may be an eyebrow raiser, but I definitely think it makes a lot of sense.
Yep.
She sort of, at times...
Chair is making odd noises. I apologise.
At times, she played a very similar role to Brooke Lachlan.
Yes.
In that she would stream forward into the forward line to make her chances. And, of course, at centre-half forward, Sabrina Frederick-Traub, who we spoke about before, she just throws everything at it. And so how can you not have a sort of all-Australian without her in it?
When you've got the nickname, like, the fans are starting to call her Queen Sabrina.
Yeah, that's true.
Says it all.
Says it all.
Especially as she's only 20.
Yeah, that is something that is ridiculous to me.
It's terrifying. Let me double check. I think she's turning 21 this year. Frederick-Traub, born in 96. So, maths, she's turning 22 at the end of the year.
22 at the end of the year. So, she's young. She's got plenty of time.
And key position player, you know what they say, Luce.
Yep.
They take some time to come on, so imagine how good she's going to be when she's 26.
Exactly. Oh, God, scary times. But following, we have Erin McKinnon taking the mantle as the premier ruck of the competition. Well deserved, I reckon. She put so much into her game this year, I reckon, and to see the emotion on her face when they lost that game to Brisbane in the final round, I think as well says so much about the emotion that she puts into the game.
Definitely. She was sort of she saw off Emma King for that ruck position. I think King was there just scanning through the squad. King's the only other... Oh, Brianne Moody. Apologies. Brianne Moody was the third ruck who was nominated. And, yeah, she another one who's super young. She's 19. So
yeah, she's only 20. She's not 20 until the end of the year. 20 until the end of the year. I think something like that. So another one who's going to be frightening to watch. And, of course, finishing off the followers, Courtney Gumm and Daisy Pierce.
Yes.
So two very reliable players, I would say. But Courtney Gumm, sort of the Renaissance woman of the AFLW, I would say. Didn't start playing football until she was 29.
The Players MVP.
Players MVP as well. And 36, moved her whole life over to GWS. And so I reckon if you were Courtney Gumm, you'd be feeling pretty chuffed about your decisions right about now.
Yep, definitely. It'd be hard to go home, I reckon, if you'd had a tough season.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, leaving your partner and your child at home.
A business, stuff like that.
She's been trying to manage that remotely. So a great reward for effort. And, of course, Daisy.
Daisy,
vice-captain.
A great leader. And interchange, to wrap it all up, Emily Bates, Taylor Harris, Karen Paxman, Ali Blackburn and Meg Downey. So
I like the fact they went for one forward, one defender and three mids on the bench.
Yeah, good point. I like that. Yeah.
They made it. Yeah, they mentioned it during the announcement, and it just, like, you know, it's a fair reflection of a match. So it's what you want.
Exactly. So very well deserving to all the players that made it in to the women's All-Australian team. All players, you had amazing seasons, so I think we've spoken about at least two or three times throughout the season.
I reckon the only one who's got a bit of a question mark on that bench is Taylor Harris.
I get that, yeah.
Probably not as consistent as some other forwards. Like, Tegan Cunningham may have a bit of a claim.
That's a good point, actually. That is true. I think Mo Hope had a claim for at least the squad.
Yeah.
Because she didn't
make the squad, Jesus.
Which I suppose is a whole sort of she didn't get running until probably the third or fourth game of the season.
So they've got Jazzy Garner named in the squad. She probably had a more consistent year than Mo did.
Before we go into the biggest awards of the night, there was also Mark of the Year, which Taylor Harris took out as well.
Well deserved mark
she took in the goal square in that first game.
Yeah.
Sort of, I was worried when she took that. I was like, has she just taken the wind out of herself?
Yeah. But I remember being up in the press box at the time, and one of the, whoever was doing the live blog back at the office was like, oh, Sarah, can you write about, you know, XYZ? And I was like, wait, what? Sorry, I missed it because I was so distracted by Taylor Harris, you know, caps. Taylor Harris says Mark. Yeah.
And then, of course, Alicia Newman with goal of the year, which you cannot dispute. A sprint like that, check side off the outside of the boot, straight through the goal.
Yeah. Nice to see those two awards were presented by the men who had won it the year before. So Joe Danaher gave his to Taylor Harris, gave the Mark of the Year medal to Taylor Harris. I was keeping an eye on the height difference there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Joe is very tall.
Yeah. He's
very tall.
Yeah. He's a tall man. I saw him when I went and saw LCD Sound System play a band last year, and I was walking and I was like, who is that tall man? And then I looked up and I saw the mustache and I was like, oh, it's Joe.
Hi, Joe. And Daniel Rioli presenting the goal of the year to Alicia Newman. And we'll see the same come September.
Hopefully
Newman will give it straight back to Dan Rioli.
Hey. But, of course, one of the biggest awards of the night is that Rising Star Award, which very well deserved went to Chloe Malloy, who also took out the AFLPA First Year Player Award. So huge season from her.
She nearly won the league best and fairest and the Rising Star in the same year, which would definitely be unprecedented. I don't think I have to, at least at the national level.
Yep.
I'm sure it's happened at state level, and, you know, there's always that freakish girl who shows up to your footy club and you're like, you've never played before, but you're the best player in the team. How is this possible? But yeah, incredible year from her. Such a composed person too. Like, she's 19 and you hear her speak and she sounds like she's 26.
That is true. She is very, I hate this saying, but a bit more, you know, wise beyond her years kind of thing. Which would probably come with all of the sporting, the spotlight that has been put on her the last few years.
She's studying sports journalism, so look out.
Oh,
yeah, Chloe, we might be out of a job.
Join us on Credit to the Girls.
the top five for Rising Star, Chloe Malloy on 50 votes, Monique Conti on 39, Sarah Allen 15, so big drop off there.
Yes.
But nice to see Sarah finish in third spot. Bonnie Toogood in 12 votes and Brianne Moody with 10. And then Talia Randall, Ashley Newtree, Libby Birch and Eloise Jones.
Amazing.
Rounding out the top nine.
But as we said, Chloe Malloy, she looked like she belonged in the AFLW the moment she stepped on the field.
Yeah.
And so I think much like Ebony Marinoff, who won it last year, very well deserving and was one of Collingwood's best players. So I think maybe not to be surprised if she maybe walks away with the club best and fairest there.
Yes, definitely. I'm not sure if you saw it on the coverage, but Eb Marinoff presented the award, and as she opened the envelope, she dropped the slip of paper that had the name on it.
She's good at dropping things. Dropped her phone when we interviewed her, dropping the slip of paper from the envelope.
If you want to listen to that interview with Eb Marinoff, you have to go way back to our first episode.
That is true. That is way back in our first episode.
Yeah,
but
could make for some interesting listening as we make all our predictions.
This is true. But now, of course, the biggest award of the night was the best and fairest. And that was taken out by Emma Carney. And I think sometimes the best way is to just with players like this, just reel off some stats, you know? Tell the people how good she really was. And she led the competition for disposals with 152 at a disposal efficiency of 60.5%, which is very good. She led with clearances with 40. She also got the most frees for at 20.
Which we looked at earlier and she's quite an antagonistic player, Carney, so that sort of raised a few eyebrows. She might have sucked in a few opponents.
She got 40 tackles for the season, which was not as many as Eb Marinoff's 87, I think it was, and Cara...
Eb's in a different league.
She's in a different league, and Cara Dunallan's 54. But, you know, 40 players from your midfield who was also racking up the most possessions, pretty good effort. And she also...
That's five tackles a match.
Yes. Yes, you were...
Maths. 40 divided by 8.
Loves it. So she huge there. She kicked 3 goals for the season. And
including that one in the fourth quarter when she ran down Caitlin Ashmore.
That was good.
Which was really good. Set shot too.
4 goal assists and also led the competition in metres gained.
Yes, I have that one over here. No one can see where we're sitting.
Across the table.
She averaged 421 metres gained per match, way above Kate Lutkins in second with 328.
Yeah, so
averaged 100 more metres gained than everyone else.
So huge, huge season from Emma Carney. And as you said, you were doing your team of the year sort of and looked at team of the week and she made it pretty much every week.
She did. She was the only player to make it in our team of the week every single week. So
huge.
Consistent year. One premiership scrunchie in there as well. Good to see Emma rocking the scrunchie. The final leaderboard for the BNF, we saw Carney with 14 votes from 7 matches, so average of two votes a match. That's a pretty good strike rate.
That's huge.
Strike rate. Get what I did there? Because she's also a bowler for the Melbourne Stars, just in case she wasn't good enough.
Loves it.
In equal second, we had Dana Hooker, Chloe Malloy and Courtney Gum. On 9 votes, so a fair way behind, but an interesting spread of players there. Equal third. Oh, no, you don't do equal third when you've had 3 and equal second. You know what I mean? Equal fifth or sixth? Fifth. Ellie Blackburn, Daisy Pierce, Chelsea Randall, Sabrina Frederick-Traub, Eb Marinoff, all with 6 votes. So we're talking the cream of the crop here. Eb Marinoff finished equal fifth, as I said. Didn't get an All-Australian berth. Interesting.
That is interesting.
Because everyone else in that top 10, Karen Paxman being the 10th, got an All-Australian Guernsey.
That is really interesting now that you've mentioned it. Ebony Marinoff's pressure was second to none, probably, in the season. So
yep.
Be disappointing for her.
Disappointing, but who do you take out of that All-Australian midfield?
That is true. That is very true. You cannot just...
Especially as they went for two genuine wingers in Eva and Hooker.
Mm.
So Marinoff is an inside mid. Does she take out Carney, Gum, Pierce or Blackburn?
Ooh, yeah. You or can't
Pax,
really.
Or Paxman's more of an outside mid, yeah. Bates is outside as well, yeah.
Cannot argue that. But I think one of the biggest talking points on this Emma Carney thing is that her future at the Bulldogs is definitely unclear. And I feel like we'll know more in the coming days about her movements.
Have you heard some whispers from North?
Yes, I have.
Whispers from the North, which is actually in the west of Melbourne.
Yeah, I know, yeah. Right? Weird. But, yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what happens with Emma Carney, whether her allegiance stays with the Dogs or whether she jumps ship to a new club. But whoever gets her... good luck.
It's a bloody big story if the league best and fairest lines up for another club. Like, that's Chris Judd-esque.
That is true, actually, yeah.
Except I don't think he left directly after a Brownlow.
No, I don't think so. But as you said, it's huge. It's a big, big move.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, Emma Carney's VFL side is Melbourne Uni, who now have an alliance with North Melbourne Tassie Kangaroos, who will be entering in next year.
Yes.
So... do old alliances hold firm?
Do your new ones? Who knows? You could have got a few
premiership
clues.
Do you want to break away from a premiership winning lineup to a new club?
You could have got a few clues with our interview with Scott Gowans earlier in the episode. So maybe listen back to see if you can find them. But I think they're keeping very tight-lipped over there over who's coming in and who's leaving. And they're definitely holding their cards close to their chests. But I think that is everything.
Unless we wanted to do club BNFs, or do we touch on them when we do club-by-club summary?
I think we touch on it when we do club-by-club summary.
This has been going
keep
for
a bit
while.
Spicy, and I think, yeah, we need to wrap this up now. It's always long when you get to the end of the season for a big wrap.
Yeah.
But
I'm getting hungry. It's lunchtime.
It is lunchtime now. But thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Credit to the Girls. Let us know your thoughts on the grand final, all Australian selections, whether you think Emma Carney was the deserving winner of the BNF and what her allegiance should be towards the clubs. Love to hear from you on Twitter or Facebook. We're also on iTunes, so you can find us there. But we will be back very soon to sort of give our lowdown on a few of the clubs and their seasons. But yeah, thank you so much, Sarah.
No worries. Thanks for having me, Luce.
Thank you for listening, and we'll speak to you all soon. Bye.